Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
American singer-songwriter Denise Marsa left the University of Arizona in Tucson after 2 years, where she was studying theater and English. Denise moved to New York City to pursue her music dreams. Performing in clubs throughout the city, it was not long before she was hired to sing on 2 recordings, the pop duet Lucky Stars with Dean Friedman, and then as the lead vocalist on the Flirts single Helpless, You Took My Love. Both made their way to the top of the music industry charts in their respective territories. After those 2 experiences, which were career-altering, Denise focused on her songwriting and inked deals with Warner Brothers UK, living in London for 4 years, and then Warner Chappell USA, moving to Los Angeles, where the second deal originated. It was while living in LA and performing with her band that she decided to start her record label, Key Media Group, to release her music. She also handled all the publicity for her debut album Self, which led her to start Key Media Public Relations, which focuses on the arts, entertainment, health, and wellness spaces. In the early 2000s, Denise began mentoring young artists and releasing their music on her label. In recent years, her focus is now back on her own work. In 2016, Denise signed an administrative deal with BMG Publishing USA, which continues today. And with their support, began writing her one-woman show, The Past. The show's limited engagement debuted to impressive reviews at the Playground Theatre in London. She also performed the show at the 2021 United Solo Festival in New York City, for which she won the Best Concert Award. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Denise Marsa.
So where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'll answer that opposite way. I'm doing great, thank you. And I'm actually in New York City in the West Village.
Oh, lovely. Let's rewind. As your journey in the music, entertainment, creative space, at what age, whether it was as a child or teenager, did you think, cool, I want to be in this space, I want to be creating? And how did that journey progress to where we are today?
Great question. So it kind of happened for me naturally. Like when I was very young, I started, you know, performing, singing. I would see an instrument, I'd pick it up and start to play. I remember when there was a drum set once, my parents, we were somewhere, I saw a drum kit and I sat down, I started playing, and my dad looks at my mom and says, where did she learn how to play drums? So it was a natural thing for me. And I just loved music from very young, and I was performing when I was younger, and I performed in high school. I had bands throughout college, high school. I was always up there. And I think the time that I really thought that I was going to, this was going to be my life, was when I was in high school and we had the band Jamaica and we did a song and, you know, we were rocking out and the whole audience stood up and started cheering. I said, well, this is cool. So I think that's how it started. I went to college. I was a theater major because I played instruments, but I was self-taught. And I really got into piano after college. I went to college for a while, and then I moved to New York, and I basically started playing in bands, and I got discovered, and different things started happening, and I've just continued it. My love of making music, my love of writing songs. I was really into songwriting. It was really important for me to be known as a songwriter, more important than as a singer. And I had my initial success as a singer, but I loved writing songs.
So Why was it important for you to be known as a songwriter more than a singer?
That's, I think because I thought maybe at the time there were so many singers and I love singing, but I felt like, I think always knew that I had my own voice. And I would always, even when I was younger, I was kind of philosophical. I was kind of always imagining things, and I was very visual and painting pictures. I was a big storyteller. And so I just, all of a sudden, and I also used to pretend to play piano at my mom's vanity. She had a little makeup table. And I just always wanted to write songs. It's, don't know, it just, I love songs, you know, and I loved the concept of them. You know, these little stories in 3 minutes, 4 minutes.
Yeah.
for me, it's just something that hit my heart.
So when you write songs, is it for yourself and other artists or only for you?
I've never really written for other artists, except for one song I wrote recently called You Should Have Asked. I went to a Lainey Wilson concert, and I was so motivated by her show and her career. I got home, and I was out in California. Then we went to Colorado to see the show at Red Rock. And then I wrote this song, You Should Have Asked, but with her in mind, not knowing if she'd ever hear it. But, you know, just kind of motivated for her and thinking, gosh, she could sing the song. But so mostly I write for me, but I'm happy if other artists cut my tracks. I'm very happy.
So from 0 to 3 to 4 minutes in creating a song, what inspires it? What invigorates it? Is it easy every time? Let's unpack your creative brain.
Nice. So it's interesting because typically, especially lately, because I'm very busy. And so I know once I get to the keyboard, sometimes I'm practicing something like a song I want to, you know, because if I don't keep playing my songs, because I am self-taught, I forget how to play them. And a lot of times I'm practicing, let's say, a song like Swimming or the Blues. And then all of a sudden something happens and I start writing another song. And so basically it happens quickly. It's a very quick process for me. I've got to, you know, finish the song. I record the song. I put it into my Pro Tools. I track it. I have to get it done or it might not get done.
Okay, so this is an interesting conversation. I'm loving this. So the fact that you're self-taught, when you're interacting with, say, other artists, when you're performing with a band on live on stage, is there ever a miscommunication because of you being self-taught and they may be taught professionally and there might be misinterpretations of words and communication, or you're just always on the same page with everyone?
That is an awesome question, Mr. Barrett. It is because when I first got started, before I could play an instrument, I used to say like, not that chord, no, not that chord, you know, I like that sound, or I would sing the notes. This is what I'm hearing. But because I started playing, I started making my own demos. I would then, when I had my bands, I would send them the demos and we would rehearse. And so any issues, I'd go over to the keyboard and say, these are the notes I'm playing. I like these notes. Or I could always hear if something wasn't quite right. And I'd say, why are you throwing that chord? It's not there. Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah. And there were times where some musicians, I remember one jazz musician was like really upset with me. He's like, this is a song called In a Matter of Moments, one of my favorite songs I've ever written. And he's looking at the chord changes. And I think sometimes in my songs, I change keys without realizing it. I just hear and I go. And he's like, you can't put this and this together. You can't. He was really upset that I had put those chords together and then changed the key. And I go, this is how I hear the song. And he was like, so flabbergasted because you're not supposed to do that. I go, what do you mean? he was very schooled. Like he's like, I went to Berkeley here. And I can't believe you did that. I go, well, that's what I'm hearing. He goes, I'm not saying it's not good, but you can't do that. You know, something in that. That was the last I ever saw of him.
So you referenced this a little bit earlier, so I'm going to bring it up. You mentioned being a very visual person. So I'm not sure if you're aware of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. So that's the way people process information. And part of that study is that each of us process information differently. And what's interesting is we each have a dominant one, a secondary, and a tertiary. There are three of them. The first one is being visual. So that's people create pictures out of what they're hearing and processing. The second one is auditory. So they hear the word, they understand the word, they put the word into the sentence, they understand the sentence, and so on and so forth. The third one is kinesthetic. I'll do that word again, kinesthetic. And that's people are processing information through their energy, tone of voice, body language, all those different sort of elements of the interaction. Now, I'm talking specifically to music because it might be different in your other areas of life, but specifically to music. When you're listening to songs of your own or by other artists, are you creating pictures? Are you hearing the words? Or is it about the energy and feeling of the song?
Yeah, another great question. Wow. It's more the energy of the song, but I always, it's really interesting because I visualize what I want the song to sound like. You know, like I'll visualize, like I want it to be climbing, or I want it to be moving really fast, or I want it to be like kind of mellow here, and then I want it to pick up. And so I have to find the chords, because I am, you know, like I'm, I go through the keyboard. Is it, you know, if you would happen to walk in when I'm trying to find the right chord for a song, you might think I don't know how to play piano, because I'm always searching. Yeah. And so, yeah, so that's the for me, I feel it. It's the energy of it. And then the audio comes to play with what I've been visualizing and what I've been feeling.
So the initial process is a visual picture and then the feeling.
Yeah. And also like how I want people to, as I develop the song, like what I'm feeling and what I want others to feel. For some reason, I've become kind of almost like I think you could say like a telescope in a way, or a compass. Like I can sort of sometimes, because I am instinctual and somewhat, you know, I think it's my sign. I am a Pisces. I can sort of feel what's going on in the earth, the vibrations. I think musicians are in tune with vibration.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think this kind of song would work well now. I think it could relate to this kind of song.
And now when you're listening to songs by other artists, are you able to just relax and enjoy it for what it is? Or is your creative brain busy unpacking what's happening?
These are my favorite questions, I have to tell you, in a long time. These are called very... Are you a musician, real quick?
I just love music, and I've been following the charts since I was little, so I'm passionate about music.
Cool, that's wonderful. It's showing in your questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, not that I didn't enjoy the others, but this is a whole other realm, another. So the question was about other artists. It's interesting you asked that, because there are times... And I really work at not judging. I really work at not being critical. You know, it's like I hear something, and I much prefer to be excited about something new that I hear. Like, I love hearing something that really excites me, because it's like, oh, yes. So I don't unpack it. I just really hear it, or I feel like it's not working for me, or it's close, but not quite. But I just try to take it for aesthetically what it is. Mm. And perhaps somewhere down the line, you know, I'm always wanting to be inspired. Heard Edward Elgar this morning. And I was like, it's become one of my favorite pieces. It's so well known. Is it Euphoria or something in that vein? Anyway,
okay. Yeah.
I get so moved. I also love classical music. I find that very moving.
So I'm interested to hear your perception on this next topic. So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the receiving, the unpacking, the booklets, the listening to song from one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware, CDs, cassettes, and vinyls are in a massive comeback. Last year, vinyls alone in the UK, 5.9 million, the biggest since 1990. Also in the UK this year, CDs have been put back into the product basket for income tax because of the upsurge of people buying them. But then we've also got these digital platforms people consume music on. What are your observations of the industry at the moment?
It's almost like the world. There are those that have, those that are really earning big, and then the rest is sort of not earning. The last, because I've been promoting, this is the first time I've actually really put some time, energy, and funds behind promoting. And I have a bit of a team here and there. And so I had a lot of streams, but the income that it equaled was not a lot at all, especially compared to the investment I made. But that's okay, because I want to be heard, and there's no rush to a certain extent at this stage. Like, I can promote Pivotal for 2 years if I want, you know. But we've gotten good response to the tracks, and we're getting really good press. We had a number 6 on the Music Week commercial dance charts with the club charts with Kiss Me in the Rain remix, Until Dawn. So overall, it's an interest. You know, I'm always gauging it, and I'm always reassessing it. And I'm always like, I woke up this morning like, oh, I'm talking to Barrett today. You know, like I'm always looking what's going on. But overall, I think what I am sensing is that the people that are the artists that are touring and the artists that are able to do tours where they can ask for a big ticket price are the artists that seem to be flourishing financially or, excuse me, that are out there. And I think performing is crucial. But even I see in the clubs in New York, not so many people are going out to clubs like they used to. Jazz clubs, yes. And some of the other clubs. But like, I think I just saw that Tommy on Broadway, which is rock and roll,
yeah,
is closing. So there's things that are happening that that aren't doing as well. And then some artists are canceling concerts. Not sure why exactly. Are ticket sales low? I don't know. And then other artists that are big artists came out with some records, you know, some vinyl or albums releases this year that did not do well at all. And so it's a very fickle, interesting kind of, you know, who knows kind of time. Very challenging.
You reference Pivotal. So let's unpack it. Tell us about this latest project you have.
Yeah, Pivotal. It's been something I've been working on. I started really 2020, my writing took a different turn. It kind of took a turn like, I've always been trying to like straddle genres, but I think I became really almost genreless, if there's a word. Because yeah. I think I'm someone that I have never enjoyed labels, this and that. And that yeah. always has been in the music business when I first got started. People would ask me, where would you see your album? Like what bin? The everything bin, you know, like the everything, you know, because I don't like being kind of put in a box,
yeah.
you know?
Categorized, and, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, to a certain extent, you could put some labels on me, of course. But I also think that my genreless music is, it's funny because it's sort of come around. Like I was doing it earlier on. And everybody was trying to get me to get into a lane. Like when I went, if I talked to labels, they would, or A&R people, or, you know, they'd say, what lane? Pick a lane. And I wouldn't pick a lane
yeah.
because I didn't pick a lane. And so now it seems like it's come around. So I feel like I've been hanging in there long enough that sort of my music feels like it's more appropriate for the today than it was when I was doing it, when I first got started, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah. Do you feel that it's easier to be genreless in this time compared to when you first started?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what Pivotal is sort of, because I was Pivotal. I had these four or five songs. I worked with the team, Lockstrom Studios in Germany. And we were working on the tracks and I had four or five of them, like Kiss Me in the Rain and then Swimming and Blues. And then all of a sudden I wrote a song called Dry Spell and then another one called Roll With Me. And they kind of took a whole different turn, but we were able to, and I worked with Roll With Me with Lockstrom Studios. But then I brought a British guy, guitarist friend of mine, Paul A. Harvey, to come in and work with me on Dry Spell. And I wrote the song. I just did piano and vocal. I was in LA at the time and I said, I got to put this on. In fact, we have a video that'll be the next video released after Don't Count Yourself Out Yet. Yeah, then there was Don't Count Yourself Out Yet and Stop. And these songs were coming out, but they were similar in the vibe because it was my voice
yes.
and the way I put chords together and the way I, my melodies. But I think as a whole, I had other songs that I was writing I was going to put them on the album. I said, you know what? No, I'm going to hold off on those because I couldn't quite find the thread to keep so that there was a pivotal line, like even lyrically
yeah.
and even melodic. And that's important for me, lyrics and melodics as well as the chords.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 10 years, 20 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that because there's millions of them. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those five songs be and by whom?
Kate Bush, Babushka.
Yeah.
Keen, the first track on the Hope and Fear album, off the top of my head. Elvis Costello, Imperial Bedroom. Actually, I love the Elvis Costello and Burt Bacharach track too. I forget the name of the song. And every time I hear it, I can cry. But it's It's Burt Bacharach and Elvis Costello, and it's about someone leaving. And Elvis Costello's voice, like, just is exquisite on the track. That's three.
Yeah.
Oh, Elgar's. I don't remember the opus, the piece that I just heard today. And then Rachmaninoff, Ba-da-da in C minor. Ba-da-da-da. Also, Earth, Wind, and Fire, September. Can you start that track starts? Oh, yeah, my God. Chaka Khan, Through the Fire. Oh.
Down the Rabbit Hole.
Yeah.
And what do you enjoy about performing live?
Oh, gosh, I don't do it enough. That's the one thing in my career, if I were to say, what do you wish had happened more? I'd say I wish that I was performing more. It was always a little very challenging because when I first got started, the bands, you know, it's a lot of work to work with, put a band together.
Yes.
And then you get everybody's schedule and then getting the gigs. And then a lot of times you don't make much money. You know, even my first gig in L.A. at the Roxy, which was fantastic. I had so many people there. I mean, I didn't make enough to, you know, like, to cover the rehearsals, you know. Yeah. And so it's, and especially if you're a struggling artist, you know, it's like, and I never really sat down and played solo. I always loved the band. I loved the instrumentation. I loved the guitar solos. I loved, you know, I loved putting the whole piece, all the pieces together. So when I perform, I think what I like the most is sort of feeling the audience. If it, you know, like, I like smaller performances. I don't, you know, bigger ones for me, it's like a blur and you look out and it's, you can't see faces. But, you know, I think I like when it's a bit more intimate and I can see when people are into it and moved and I can feel their energy kind of being part of the performance because it inspires me, it motivates me. And so it's sort of also like me kind of testing, you know, it's like almost like you're a chef, you're cooking your meal. Yes. And then you, and people go, oh, it's delicious. Or, oh, you know, so it's kind of cool. You want to share what you do. And so that's one of my things. I want to perform more for sure.
Okay. So I've got another point of discussion around this. I'm normally that person who's right up in front, dancing, jamming, doing my thing. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe one or two photos, one or two videos, and I put my cell phone away. I notice a lot of people around me oftentimes will have their cell phones up for a lot of the time of the show. From the person seeing the audience, and you mentioned connection, if a lot of people are on their cell phones, do you not feel that takes away from that connection, or it's just where society is at the moment?
Great question. So the last time I performed was 2021 at the United Solo Festival here in New York, and I won Best Concert, which was lovely.
Oh, nice.
Very appreciated. Yeah, thank you. And so I don't remember seeing, and that's the cool thing for me when I perform, like, I don't necessarily see things. I sort of more feel the audience.
Oh, okay.
And so I didn't necessarily see phones. And then I was in London, 2018, I did my show, The Pass. No one had a camera out that I could see. Maybe people took pictures, but it wouldn't bother me. I think there are some people now that I've seen that they don't want cell phones up at all, or they're, you know, or when people are just the whole time holding it up.
Yeah, yeah.
I think for some reason, I don't know if it's because people want to look at it. It'd be a good question for someone to do a study, like even an iPhone company or a smartphone company. So you go to it, like, or someone who's runs an artist, a management company, or a tour, even Live Nation could do a questionnaire. Did you film, how much of the film show did you film?
Yeah, yeah.
And how, and so maybe 6 months later, they send the questions, how did you watch it again?
Yes.
Or did you post it once and then people watched it? Like, I was there, I'm showing off, I'm there. Or this is so awesome, I want to share it with you. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. For me, it hasn't come into my career enough. I haven't performed enough. And I don't think at this stage I would be upset, you know, because it doesn't matter. Like, I people do what they do and you can't, you know, you can't change it. But I wonder if people film to watch it later.
Yes.
Like, I film stuff like I film portions of a movie. If it's a line that I love and I'm like, oh, here comes this fabulous line. And then then every once in a while, if I'm on a train or if I'm waiting for something, I'll look at and I'll watch it, you know. If people do it just for the moment, they post it and then they never see it again, or do they, does it keep inspiring them? Does it keep, is it part of their lives?
Yeah.
And does it take place of going to a streaming? Is it, you know, is it take, does it take the place of buying the album or vinyl?
Exactly. For me, those clips, I do the post for what I need to do for the work. But in fact, I never look at them again because I like to remember it from my brain and the being in the moment and the memory. That's how I choose to prefer to remember it. Because oftentimes those videos, that's the time you're like so busy of focusing on getting the correct shot and the movement and the lights that it actually took you away out of being in the moment because you were so busy focusing on the technicalities of it.
Yeah. And that's what I've heard some people say, like I'll be somewhere and someone will say, be in the moment. And, you know, not necessarily to me, but to someone they're with. And I think that's important. And I wonder, but I wonder what the moment is these days. I mean, is the moment longer than it used to be? It is. Because we're filming these moments. So now a moment, it could be an hour or a moment could be 10 minutes.
Yes.
Like I, as we get on in this world, in this life, on this universe, our definitions becoming less definitive. Do you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Totally with you. I'm loving this conversation. Denise, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say to the audience?
Well, my new single is Don't Count Yourself Out Yet. And I think I was feeling in the universe that a lot of people are giving up, a lot of people discouraged, a lot of people are in despair. Mm-hmm. You hear some things from teenagers to 30, 40, 50-year-olds. A lot of people are taking substance to sort of numb themselves. And then a lot of times they're taking more and more and more and more. And then there's all of a sudden no life because, you know, you see all these stories.
Yeah.
So I say, not that I want to be bummer, but I want to say, don't count yourself out yet. Stay in the game. If you're out of the game, come back in the game. Do what you love no matter what. If you used to like flying kites when you were a young kid, go back, go to the park, get yourself a kite and fly a kite. Like, bring back that part of you that has defined you and that also that makes you happy. Like bowling, go bowling. I don't know, like, you know, not be so worried and don't judge yourself.
Yeah.
Don't hear your in your head saying, yes, no, you're good, bad, you know, just enjoy and don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.